This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks, and we'll begin today with one of the most contentious arguments sparked by President Donald Trump, and there have been a lot of them. At issue is his travel ban on people entering the U.S. from six mostly Muslim countries. Up until now, the courts have blocked his executive order, calling it discriminatory. But today, the U.S. Supreme Court said at least part of the ban could go into effect until the court takes up the case in the fall. So it's at least a partial and temporary victory for the president to finally make good on a major campaign promise. Here's White House spokesman Sean Spicer earlier today.
The president was honored by the 9-0 decision that allows him to use an important tool to protect our nation's homeland. His number one responsibility as commander-in-chief is to keep the American people safe, and that's exactly what this executive order does.
Let's get reaction from a local immigration attorney who has strenuously opposed the ban. Susan Church is chair of the New England chapter of the American Immigration Lawyers Association, and she joins us today from Logan Airport. Susan Church, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
So I want to start by just clarifying what the court said. It said the ban could go into effect, but only against people from those six countries who have no connection to the U.S. at all. How do you make sense of that?
You know, no offense, but we feel like this is a victory. I mean, they have narrowed the injunctions of the Ninth and the Fourth Circuits, but only to an extremely small class of people who I'm here with five or six immigration lawyers, and we're all trying to find out one example of one person who might be affected by this narrowing of the injunction. And the only example we can come up with is the family that's coming here to Disneyland for vacation. And to be honest, those people from those six countries don't get visas to come here to Disneyland.
So how would it work, though? It's so basically anybody with a connection, that is a family member or presumably a contract to work, a job, would not be affected.
That's correct. And how it works is really where our concerns lie, because it's leaving this to who to decide. Is it going to be the airlines again? That would be unmitigated chaos. Is it going to be Customs and Border Protection officers? Well, that leaves a lot of variance in the decision-making process. Is a cousin close enough? Is a sister-in-law close enough? The Supreme Court said a mother-in-law is close enough, but you know, the devil is in the details. That's really where our concerns lie at this point in time.
Who's going to be making these calls? And isn't this a sort of recipe for chaos and uncertainty again, or not?
That is exactly right. It's another recipe for chaos and uncertainty. During the last travel ban, the airlines would make these decisions after sending a manifest to Customs and Border Protection. And the Customs and Border Protection, we believe, would then cross people off the list from those countries. We don't know how that could possibly happen this time because they won't be able to interview the person to figure out what the ties are. Again, in my experience, in fact, I was at the airport many, many days during the last ban. Anybody who is coming here as a visitor, which may be the most likely class of people affected by this, except for the refugees, they would be parents of U.S. citizens who are about to give birth, right? I didn't see anybody coming for vacation. Conference goers should not be affected by this. People speaking at conferences should not be affected by this. So I feel like there's a very small percentage of people affected, and those people are the ones where we're going to try to, you know, let Customs and Border make the decision, not the airlines, and have the decision making be reviewable and allow access to attorneys during the decision making process. Mm.
Susan, the opinion faulted the two federal appeals courts that had blocked the travel policy for going too far to limit Trump's authority over immigration. Does that suggest to you in any way how the Supreme Court might eventually rule on this?
And that's the part of the decision that we're most disappointed in, because the plaintiffs have to have standing, right? And so that's where the Supreme Court is coming in saying these individuals don't have standing because they lack connection to the United States. There's a legitimate question as to standing of people who have no ties to the United States. So in that sense, I don't think that the Supreme Court's decision was completely out of
I want to read just a briefly from part of the statement from the Department of Homeland Security today. The department will provide additional details on implementation after consultation with the Department of Justice and state. The implementation of the executive order will be done professionally with clear and sufficient public notice, particularly to potentially affected travelers and in coordination with partners in the travel industry. Does that give you any kind of confidence that this will be carried out smoothly?
Well, that gives me pause because, again, I don't think this needs to be left to the airlines. I don't think it's fair to ask the airlines to do that. I think that is going to invite incredible unfairness to people trying to establish this to an airline ticketing agent that they have a relative in the U.S. And how are they going to prove it? Do they have to have birth certificates of these relatives? So I hope that the government really does sincerely not want to cause the chaos that erupted at the last travel ban implementation, because that was absolutely out of control. Mm. There were people left in countries without any ties to those countries. There were people, we had to try to get the consulates open on weekends to try to get transit visas for people. I hope that this administration takes that statement seriously and recalls the chaos and misery that they caused during the last ban. We had been told that they would not implement it for 72 hours, which, again, I hope that that is what they fall through on.
I want to ask you finally about this part of the decision. It says that the court fully expects that the relief that they grant today will permit the executive to conclude its internal work and provide adequate notice to foreign governments within the 90-day life of the order. Does that suggest to you that, in a way, the court is putting pressure on the administration to review its vetting procedures and possibly end the ban even before this gets to the Supreme Court in October?
That's exactly what the court is trying to say, I believe. So the Ninth Circuit lifted its ban on addressing the vetting that needed to be done on June 12th. The 90 days would start running from at least at a minimum that date, which means that by September 12th, when the court is just barely back in session, the 90-day period would have run and this would be, issue would be moot.
All right. Well, that's Susan Church. She's an immigration attorney and leads the New England chapter of the American Immigration Lawyers Association, speaking to us from Logan Airport. Susan Church, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
And let's get a little more expert analysis on this decision from WBUR legal analyst and retired federal judge Nancy Gertner. Nancy, good to see you as always.
Good to be here.
So I was struck. We heard Sean Spicer saying the president was honored by that 9-0 decision, sort of declaring victory. We heard Susan Church saying, no, this was a very, very narrow reading of the law, and we think it's pretty good for our side. What do you think?
You know, there were two ways of looking at these travel bans. One was to look at it the way the judges of the Fourth Circuit and the Ninth Circuit did, which is you're looking at this in the context of a president who seemed to be overreaching mightily from the first ban to the second. The other way was to look at it in the way some historians have looked at Civil War judges in the North before the Civil War, who enforced the Fugitive Slave Act rigorously to prove their neutrality as judges. And so I actually predicted that the Supreme Court would cut the, you know, the baby in half, so to speak, here, because they would want to show that notwithstanding Trump's, you know, accusations, that they are being neutral. And in what way do they cut it in half? Well, they, on the one hand, carve out a category as to whom is a very small category, which are the people with no connections. And in addition, they're essentially throwing down the gauntlet to the government to finish whatever this vetting process is so that bans, overbroad bans, wouldn't be necessary. I think it was a compromise decision for the purpose of sort of kicking the can down the road.
But the question that I asked Susan, I'd like to ask you, does it look like this decision in a way was designed to put pressure on the Trump administration to sort of get this done within that 90-day period so that maybe the Supreme Court doesn't even have to pick up this case in October?
I think that it was clearly a compromise.
Yeah.
It is, we want to show our distance, you know, our neutrality and our, you know, that we're looking at this carefully, but on the other hand, we're not really doing very much. People have talked about one of the things that Justice Roberts is concerned about is the legitimacy of the court. If they had simply affirmed the Fourth Circuit and the Ninth Circuit, no doubt he would have been concerned that the next comment from the president would be the so-called Supreme Court. Now, that shouldn't have driven this decision. But reality is reality. I think that's what was going on here.
I want to ask you about the dissent from Justice Clarence Thomas. He was joined by Justices Samuel Alito and Neil Gorsuch, and they argued that the court should have allowed the entire travel ban to go into effect while they consider the case. And here's a bit of what he said. I fear that the court's remedy will prove unworkable. The compromise also will invite a flood of litigation until this case is finally resolved on the merits. The idea, the flood of litigation over who essentially would be covered by this ban. Who is this narrow class of folks covered by the ban?
Well, it's an interesting position, right? If the ban is overbroad, it is bound to sweep within it people who should not have been excluded. Mm. Now the government's trying to parse that, and so that, yes, there'll be efforts to litigate who should have been excluded and who shouldn't. That is, on the one hand, chaos. On the other hand, it is litigating and legislating with precision to make sure that the only people who are excluded are those people who deserve it. You have to map Justice Gorsuch's position in this case, by the way, with his position in the Religious Freedom Court case that we would be talking about, to make it clear that, you know, this is a very conservative justice that we've just added to the court.
You mentioned that religious freedom case. I want to get to that. But one more question about the travel ban decision. What's the remaining question? I mean, what's left out? What are you left pondering as a former judge?
Well, this is what's left is the merits of the case. In other words, this was a preliminary injunction. Originally a temporary restraining order, then a preliminary injunction. This is a ruling by a court to preserve the status quo while the merits can be decided. And so there'll be an oral argument in the fall. The merits will be whether or not these cases reflect discriminatory animus on the part of the presidents to Muslims, whether it's broader than it needs to be, whether there was any compelling interest to justify it based on, you know, given its overbreadth, you know, whether there were sufficient findings on national security. The dissent suggests that, you know, when the president intones national security, somehow all distinctions are irrelevant, and that's troubling.
So I want to move on to that religious freedom case that you mentioned. So this is a case where religious freedom advocates, which they are hailing, and the ruling is essentially this. A Lutheran church in Missouri, which operates a preschool, was denied a state grant to resurface their playground. Missouri officials said the state constitution bans giving aid to religious schools. But the Supreme Court ruled that taxpayer-funded grants, which are available to nonprofits, could not be denied to a school run by a church. And here's what Chief Justice John Roberts wrote. Quote, "The exclusion of Trinity Lutheran from a public benefit for which it is otherwise qualified solely because it is a church is odious to our Constitution all the same and cannot stand." Reactions to this ruling?
Well, the implications of this are all over the map. So there's a famous footnote. It's already famous. The decision was down for a couple of hours. And the footnote essentially says, this case involves discrimination based on religious identity with respect to playground resurfacing. We do not address relevant, it doesn't deal with findings, funding, or other forms of discrimination, fundings in other settings or other forms of discrimination. Significantly, Justice Gorsuch and Thomas and Alito disagree with that footnote.
They refuse to sign it.
Well, they want to say, oh, yes, it does. Huh. Yes, it does have meaning beyond funding for playgrounds. It has meaning. So what would be the context in which we're going to see funding next? We're going to see funding with respect to education vouchers, other kinds of, you know, the support for what utility payments in church schools. We're going to see the funding decisions. And if the court is split, as it is plainly, about the significance of this case, this is litigation down the line. Breyer only joined in the majority because of that footnote. Justices Gorsuch and actually it's Gorsuch and Thomas refused to sign on to it. And there were vigorous dissents from Justices Sotomayor and Justice Ginsburg, who said the implications of this are extraordinary.
Hmm. And those implications would be the liberal perspective would be a troubling erosion of that line between church and state, essentially.
It is. And it's the concern about an establishment of religion.
Yep.
When public funds, taxpayer money, go for religious institution, where does it end? Does it end at resurfacing the playground? Or does it end at other kinds of subsidies? And in every subsidy that excludes churches because of a concern about the establishment of a religion would offend what Justices Alito and Gorsuch were saying every subsidy that says we'll give to public institutions but not religious ones has the same problem. So the decision has the potential for very broad implications, which, as I said, Justice Breyer recognized, as did some of the others.
Two big decisions today. WBUR legal analyst and retired federal judge Nancy Gertner helping us understand them. Thank you for coming in. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.